May 29th, 1997. Started out like any other usual day around our family, other than my wife came in and nudged me and said, "Hey, I've been up for about an hour or so. I think I'm having contractions. Today may be the day." I went, "Yeah," I jumped up and she goes, "Hold on, not sure just yet. Take your time, get a shower, eat, we'll see how it goes." Okay. Full night's rest, got a good shower, cup of coffee, had a little breakfast. And the doctor's office had called back and said, "Yep, let's go on in." Yeah. Well, if you know my wife, everything was already packed and at the door and ready to roll. So very calmly, collectively, we walk outside. I'm feeling pretty good, by the way. No problems at all. Cheryl has been on the couch now for about a month because of high blood pressure and challenges. And I'll never forget her feet look like Barney Rubble feet, the poor thing. They were just humongous. We made our way out to the car and we had a camera. We had a camera just ready, those little Instamatic Kodaks. I said, "Hey, you want to take a picture?" And I didn't realize at the time we took the world's first selfie. And so we sat there in the car, smiled. You know, my smile was huge. Hers kind of had, I'm not sure if it was a smile or I'm ready to kill my husband. But it was nonetheless. We took the picture. I remember setting the camera down, reaching for my seatbelt when the first real contraction hit her. She grabbed that hand rest, came up out of that seat and went, "Drive!" And I went as fast as I want. She goes, "Yes, just drive!" Well, we had a good 40-mile ride to the hospital because we were going to Huntsville Hospital from Albertville. So literally, it was Jeff Gordon. I'd already talked to my state trooper friends. Darren wasn't there at the time, but I had buddies in the media who were on the lookout, and I could have called them in a second. They'd already told me they'd give me a police escort. I was cooking. It is the best day ever. I'm going to have a child, and I get to drive as fast as I want. We got to the hospital, let her out right at the front door. They took her right in, and I went to the, parked the car, and you got special privilege parking. Made my way in with our suitcases, and it was the most luxurious suite you've ever seen in your life. Cheryl was already set up in the bed, and they were attending to her, and they had a huge TV, and the golf tournament was on. I said, "Can this day get any better?" And she let me watch it, and within 3 hours, we were delivering a baby. I still felt pretty good. I didn't have any pain, feeling all right. And Jill's born. We had a daughter. It was a surprise to us. We didn't want to know. So, wow, a daughter. They weighed her. She weighed in at like 9 pounds. And they said, "Oh, wow, your child's in the 90th percentile." I went, "Well, of course she is. 90th percentile, yeah." They took her and cleaned her and brought her in there to us and eventually moved us to another room. And the nurses kept saying, "Would you like for us to take her to the nursery?" No. I am ready for this. "You want to take her to the nursery?" No. Well, about 10 o'clock that night, when that child had been crying now for a good 3 hours, and the nurse had to come in and redo the diaper that I had put on there. And the nurse gave me the look of, "Do you want us to take her to the nursery now?" And I was like, "Please." It was at that moment that it hit me. Oh my, what have I done? I'm in awe and wonder of what God has created. I'm in awe of wonder of this life that He has brought into our life. And I'm in awe and wonder of what my wife has done, and I've never loved her more. And now I'm wondering, what am I going to do? What do I do? And I kid you not, it was at that moment that I literally almost started shaking and had to sit down going, oh my, what am I going to do? I want us to consider now, as we talk about this series on rearing our children in the Lord in the way that they should go, that we consider now the wonder years. And there is nothing more wonderful than having a life that God has given to you. There's nothing more wonderful than seeing how each and every one of us are fearfully and wonderfully made. But there's never more wonder in your life. Or how am I going to handle this awesome responsibility now? What do I do? How do I handle this? And we're not just talking about the role of a father in bringing up a child and making sure the child has nourishment, that the child has an education, but even more importantly, to the child of God, to the father who has devoted themselves and their family to the Lord. What am I going to do now to bring this child up in the Lord? It's not that I just want my children to survive. It's not that I just want them to live. I want them to go to heaven. The wonder of it all, of leading a child now home. If you have the Heavenly Library with you, I want you to take down the book of Deuteronomy, and I'd like for you to go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. And while you're turning there, if you'll just allow me for just a moment, it's imperative that we understand the historical context of this passage. More than likely, if you've been going to church for any amount of time, any amount of years, no matter how long or how old, you have probably heard this passage. You probably have read this passage. You may have even memorized this passage. And you know, if you've studied the words of our Lord Jesus about the greatest command, it actually comes from this passage. But here's the historical context of it all. Children in this day and age in which Moses is writing this to the children of Israel, children in that day and age were reared exclusively by their parents. There were no daycares, there were no public schools, there were no screens to keep a child busy. It was 24 hours a day. You with your child. 24 hours a day, you are tutoring and leading and educating this child. Families lived together, they worked together, they ate together, they worshiped together. They were with family all the time. Even extended family would still be in their midst. They were all together as a family. And even if you think back of it to the children of Israel and in the wilderness wandering years, they were even together as tribes and functions and in tents that even their extended families were all together, and that's where you reared your children, in that environment. There were certainly some pros. They didn't have to deal with cell phones. There was no internet. Nice. No easy access to immorality. No easy access to immorality or devices. Society wasn't demanding on them a lot. There were really, in that day and age, not many, many single parent homes, because even the wife who maybe had lost her husband, or even the person who had dealt with challenges, the family was to bring them in. And so there was a family unit always there to rear the children and to take care of them. Another one of the pros is that in that society that they lived in, there was not a sexual identity crisis or any of the other issues that we have going on in our world from a sociological standpoint. But there were some cons. While there were many pros, there were many cons. They were living in a desert. They were living in tents. Some of us in our houses go, I don't have enough space. Imagine being in a tent with all your family. They were heavily influenced by pagan religions. In other words, idolatry was still so rampant and around them. And their daily concern in a wilderness was, what are we going to eat? Now, I know for most of us in our homes, our little kids are going, what are we going to eat? It's like, oh my word, go look at the pantry. What have you got? No. They were like, what are we going to eat? We're in the Publix. What are we going to eat? Oh, we had manna yesterday. You get it again today. And they were constantly on the move. And they were headed to a place that none of them had been before. My point in sharing all that with you is this, and this is very important. No matter what age you live in, no matter when or where you are parenting, these are timeless truths. These are timeless truths. And the pros and cons are always going to be there for any parent in any household in any situation. And so what the Lord is teaching us through Moses is this is how you do it in any time period, at any time, in any situation. This is how you rear your children. Deuteronomy 6 verses 1 through 9. Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you. That you may do them in the land which you are going over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son and your son's son, by keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that they may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you in the land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gate. When we look at this and we study this, we understand that what Moses is actually sharing here is one of the great Shema prayers in Scripture. And Shema is simply the Hebrew word for hear. Hear. And what you actually get when you hear this passage, if you'll notice twice in the reading, you hear God saying, hear me! Listen up! All right, Phil, you just have a baby. You don't know what to do. You don't even know how to change a diaper. Listen to me. This is the secret. This is what you do. The secret to parenting. Are you ready? Repetition. 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 That's it. That's it. Every day, every moment, every instant, it's what you do. It's a consistent, always on switch. There's never an off switch. There's never a point in parenting where you go, I'm just going to turn it off for a while. No. It's always on. No excuses. No exemptions. No, well, you know what? I know we need to get back into those things a little bit later. We're going to get back more into church and we'll catch more a little bit later. But when we get, no! No! There's none of that. There's never a moment you have a time off. And what you do is constantly remind your children of who the Lord is. You remind your children of His Word. You remind your children of His promises. And here's what you recognize. You are in the training business now. That's your business. And so I said, what's your card? I'm a trainer. I'm a life trainer. And I have the souls of these children dependent upon me to lead them to God. I am a steward of what God is giving me. And notice this, even in a wilderness, off all on your own, or maybe wandering with family, even in your wilderness, Satan is lurking. And he wants your children. You know what's interesting in this time period? There were some incredible parents. I think of Amram and Jochebed. Anybody know who that is? Moses' parents. Now, technically, they probably weren't parenting during this specific time period. Obviously, Moses is a little bit older. They probably weren't even alive. But look at the heritage they left behind with Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, all servants of the Lord. Those are some good parents. And they were parenting as slaves. There's Caleb and Joshua. Some great parents. But you know what's kind of interesting? You have Caleb and Joshua, but there's 10 other men on a list a little bit later in Numbers 13 who weren't exactly great parents, were they? But even in a wilderness, there's great parents. And so what did the great parents make sure that their children knew? Well, they went to this passage, and here's what they made sure their children understood and knew. That they knew the love of the Lord. And I want you to notice what God says here in Deuteronomy 6. He says that your children may love me. Well, you're only going to love someone who you know loves you. And so what you're doing as a parent is you're constantly reminding your children of the love of the Lord. And how do I get that across to my child? I remind my child, as the Lord says, hear of His salvation. I am taking you to your own land. I have freed you from bondage. I have freed you from slavery. And I am taking you to your own land. You remind your child daily of the salvation of the Lord. In verse 2, you'll notice that you remind your child of the judgment of the Lord, that you are to fear Him. A child needs to be taught fear, and that is a healthy respect, and we're definitely going to talk more about that in our next lesson. But you'll notice that He says, you teach your children to fear me, for I can also bring judgment. And then a little bit later, if you go down to verse 10, what you see here is that you remind your children of the provisions and the promises that I am making to them, that I am bringing them to a land. And I'm bringing them to a land, and I'm going to fill their houses in verse 11 with all the good things. Their cisterns, and though that they're not going to have to dig, and their vineyards and their olive trees that they did not plant. And when they eat, they're going to be full. I am a God of great provisions. And so you remind your children when they get up, when they lie down, when they come in, when they go out, all about the Lord and what He's doing. And it never ends. It never, ever, ever ends. And notice what He says in verses 12 to 15. Why? Well, why is it every day, every moment, when they come in, when they go out, when they rise up, when they lie down? Take care, lest you forget the Lord, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. It is the Lord your God you shall fear. Him you shall serve, and by His name you shall swear. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of the people who are around you, for the Lord your God is in the midst and is a jealous God, lest the anger of the Lord your God be kindled against you, and He destroy you from the face of the earth. I want you to grasp and understand that God is acknowledging one of the great struggles of humanity. We are so forgetful. We are so forgetful. I mentioned in our first hour, just 9/11. We are so forgetful. Think of it from God's point of view, reminding us of simply His love and His care for us. So what do I need to understand? What do I need to grasp? How am I going to get all of this across to my children? And this is what I want to do, especially in the wonder years. Well, I want you to grasp that the wonder years are critical years for parenting. I mean critical years for parenting. I fear that often we look at these years as, just feed them, get them a bottle, make them walk, make sure they talk a little bit, move around, and just move along. No, it's quite the opposite. In fact, if you were looking to divide parenting up into 6-year increments, 0 to 6, 6 to 12, 12 to 18, these are probably the most critical. Because it's in these years, that our children are the most impressionable. And why is that? Because we're their only impression. They're not old enough to be distracted by other things, and they're only going to see, they're only going to hear, they're only going to be influenced by what we allow to be in front of them. They are impressionable at this time, and this is our chance to have 100% attention. Is there anything you've noticed about kids? Especially babies. You set them down, they can't do nothing but breathe, burp, and yeah. That's it. You want to make a parent happy and bring them a gift? Just bring them diapers. It's the greatest gift ever. A burp rag. I mean, yeah. That's all they do. They eat and sleep and cry. They can't do anything on their own. Isn't that amazing? A baby giraffe within a couple of hours has got to figure it out to run. Not a child. They sit there and look at you and go, and what that is a gift. Because now they're only focused on you. It's in these years that their ears and their eyes are focused wholly on you. And every thought, every instinct, every feeling, is going to come from what you put before them. How they view parents, how they view correction, how they view affection, how they view security, how they view life, and how they view the Lord. It all begins right here. Aristotle, the great philosopher, said this, "Give me a child until the age of 7, and I'll show you the man." You know, Catholics also have the same similar saying, "Give us a child to age 5 and we'll have a Catholic for life." You know why that is? Because those are the years that you make the greatest impact in their life. Those are the years that you have all their attention. In fact, even the CDC reminds all of us that when it comes to brain development, 90% of our child's brain development is actually going to take place in the first 5 years. That's why nutrition is so important, even in the womb. And stimulus that comes from what we do with them on a daily basis is so important. This is when their brain, and this is when their brain forms, and this is where they learn to think. And what's also interesting is that in these years, these are the optimal years for learning. In fact, right out of the womb, every child that is born healthy has full sense of eye and hearing ability. In other words, they're ready to see all and hear all, and they're focused on you. You have an undivided audience. And everything they see and hear is automatically being recorded. Just think of it as a computer that's automatically going in there, and you control all the input. You get to program it as you want. God says, when they rise up, when they lie down, when they come in, when they go out, you remind them of me. Emotional controls starts here. Really, it's most optimal between 3 and 6 years old. Social skills, this is where it all begins. Language, 1 to 6. Now, here's what's interesting. Anybody here have an accent? Yeah, come on. Yeah, most of us do, unless you grew up in the Midwest. If you're like me, Texas, everybody hears it. It all started 1 to 6. Well, here's what was interesting. I was actually born in Ohio. I'm a Yankee. Don't hold that against me. But my parents were Texans. Guess how I talk? Texan. I've been out of Texas 30 years. I still talk Texan. And motor development. You know what's sad? What's sad is, I fear, especially in the world around us, the world. A lot of people want children like they want a pet. I need some affection. I want something to love me. I want something to do. But it never changes their work schedule. It never changes their life. Why? Because I'll just go let somebody else take care of that child while I go off through this. I can just kind of check them into a boarding house. Like my dog. My dog's at the Bed and Biscuit now. I'll just take my kid to here and let them take care of it. And then I'll get back to it when I can. And God says, no. No. If your goal is to rear your child in the Lord, then you want them learning everything from you. And the first 6 years are their wonder years that you get to fill all the wonder. I want to share with you just real quick some resources that are at your disposal. And this is the time to really maximize your resources as a parent to do just what the Lord is commanding you to do when they rise up and when they lie down. There's a series that we listened and watched, especially Cheryl. Let's just be honest. Cheryl got into it a lot more than I did. She was real good about filling me in. But it's a series called Growing Kids God's Way. Now, I'll go ahead and warn you, for many people, it's a very conservative outlook on rearing children. But to us, it was just priceless. And it was all Bible-based. And it put the emphasis on rearing your children God's way, and it gave us so many great insights into rearing our children. What else became a very important thing to us was reading to our children, and we had a book that we read to our children all the time, even when they were just babies, but we read to them Mrs. Lee's stories about Jesus. Miss Lee, her husband Irvin Lee was a preacher in North Alabama for many years, just a wonderful godly man, and she did a lot of writing, and man, she wrote some great children's literature. And so there was that constant reading to the children. Music. Everywhere you go, anytime you're in the car, anytime you have music on, it's children's songs. Now, who isn't here that when you reared your children, there's a whole decade of pop music you just didn't hear? You went, I've never heard that song. I looked at you. No, I never heard a song from 97 to 2010. It's a blur. Anything that came out those years, I have no idea. Because you know what I'm hearing all the time? Do everything without complaining. Do everything. A children's song. VeggieTales. Oh, where is my hairbrush? I don't know how many times I've heard Larry sing silly songs with Larry. But those are the years. Those are the years that you make it a part of your life because you want that brain to develop with an understanding and a knowledge of God. And I can live without NSYNC. I survived. But I know every VeggieTale and children's song in the world. And so do my kids. And they learn Bible verses that way. You know what else you have? The most incredible spiritual, godly, great, impactful resource in the world, especially for children in young ages, are simple proverbs. Whether it comes in songs or memory verses or just repetition because it's on the refrigerator door. Even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right. You'll notice that you think of the Proverbs. Solomon wrote over 3,000 Proverbs, and even people in surrounding nations would marvel at what he had written. He who guards his mouth, as he writes in Proverbs 21:23, he who guards his mouth and tongue guards his soul from trouble. Proverbs 13:20, he who walks with the wise will grow wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. And then you have the simple sayings of our Lord. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You control their mental computer. For 6 years, it's all you. If you take advantage of it. And what our Heavenly Father is imploring us to see is godly parents who want nothing more than for our children to go to heaven is that you understand the value of repetition, 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 repetition. I want to go to our application now. And I want to just remind us as we get into the application of the disclaimers that I made in the very first lesson. Y'all remember the disclaimers? All right. Proverbs are simply practical teachings. They're not always absolutes. The most important disclaimer I want you to remember is please focus on the message, not the messenger. I'm still not done with my children, all right? I'm still not done. And I know I've made many mistakes, and I'm going to share a couple with you here. But to me and Cheryl, these are the essentials that we would like to share with you. If you remember last week, I encouraged everybody to have a mission statement. Or in other words, when you consider the idea of what is your plan for us, the plan and the mission statement for our children was that they be a blessing to others. We want our children to be a blessing to others. And then as they get older, we want them to become servants of others. Well, here's what you do in the first 6 years. Here's what we did. And this was important to us as an essential to meet our mission statement. Now, hopefully you've got your own mission statement and you are ready to roll with that. And I want you to build on it. But this is how it works for us. All right, here's the things that were our essentials. And all these are going to come audibly. I don't just make the whole list out here on the PowerPoint for you. What we wanted first and foremost is that when our children were infants, especially, that they still went everywhere we went as much as possible. And what that meant was going to church. How can I use this gift that God has given me for an excuse not to do what He wants me to do? Does that make sense? So with that in mind, you got to come ready prepared. That child born in 97... She could sense when you were comfortable, and so she would cry. If you stood up and were uncomfortable, she would stop and just look at you. So what it meant for us when we lived in Melbourne is I literally paced the back of the building with a baby for the first few songs, got through the Lord's Supper. When I was done to the Lord's Supper, Cheryl would come and take the handoff, and I would go up into the pulpit, and she would sit in the back. And she was happy. You were just ready for that. You came prepared for that. You came prepared for the fact that your children, as they grow, have to be a blessing to everybody else. Happy feet. Don't you love kids with happy feet? Happy feet, happy feet. Well, you can't be doing happy feet running around the church building. You're not going to be a blessing to others if you're a bowling ball going down the alley. Yes, I've put my children on a leash. I have. Especially at Disney. I don't care. Don't come back here. Are you going? Oh, you're not getting away from me. You can walk. You just can't walk very far. Because they need to be a blessing to others. What was sweet was when they were able to walk, they would come up to the pew about where Kyler was sitting, and that's where Miss Junie sat. This was Mark Lloyd's mom, and she sat there with a coin purse that she had filled with after-dinner mints. So she was a big attraction. But you had to talk to Miss Junie, look her in the eye. And it was a great place to learn manners and to show appreciation. And as much as it meant to us, it meant the world to Miss Junie. Parents, please know if you have a child 1 to 6, you want to brighten the lives of others, use your kids. They can become a great blessing. But also when you come to church with your kids, you sometimes leave a mess. So we had the book bag that had all the books to keep them busy, all the flip books to keep them going. Sometimes they had snacks, and in each and every one of the book bags was a dustbuster. Leave no trace. Leave no trace. We did not want the people who cleaned the building to know where the Robertsons had been. Be a blessing. You need to emphasize the family, especially in this time. And for us, in my schedule, I was in the reporting world and working 60 to 70 hours a week and then preaching on the weekend. So we decided homeschooling was best for us. And we decided it was going to be imperative that we do something like this because I would never get to see the children if I stayed with this current occupation. And eventually there was a change made in that. But nonetheless, we emphasized family. And what that also meant was, Dad, regardless of how long you work, Dad, when you get home, you're on. You take the best, last, deep breath that you can in the car, and when you walk in the house, you're on. Because chances are that wife of yours who's been talking baby now in baby Chinese language for the past 14 hours all on her own and changing diapers and cleaning up messes, she's going to hand that child off to you and say, I'm going for a walk. And you are on. And so you grab everything that you can, the diaper bag, and you become proficient in everything as well. I was so proud of seeing Sean walking down the hall. Sean came walking down the hall before services this morning. He was packed down like a mule going up the Himalayas. It's a good husband. It's a good husband. You emphasize family everywhere you go and what you do, and you do projects together as a family. You read together as your family. You take trips together as a family. You do functions as a family. You have guests over at your house as a family. It becomes a family project to get everybody involved. You want to make somebody's day? Let your five-year-old come and participate in serving the meal at your home. You emphasize the projects together as a family. And especially as a family, you make your nighttime traditions solid. I mean, every night it was you sat there and you read a book together, and then every night it was either the Princess Carrie, which was usually a swan dive off the back of the couch, or you had the Bronking Buck down the hall, Carrie. Guess who got that one? He's 22. No, I don't kid you anymore. But every night, family comes first. You worship as a family. You eat as a family. It all begins here. For us, the biggest challenge with our schedule was to really get a day off, we had to get out of town. You just had to make a plan to leave. But emphasize your family. Togetherness is a family. You need to respect their needs. Children, especially when they're young, they have certain schedules. You know when nap time's coming. You know when the grouchiness is coming. You know when the hunger's coming. Respect the schedules. And respect their feelings at certain times as well. You need to understand, it's even in these first few years, they begin to develop their personality, their fears, their anxieties, their likes, their dislikes, their emotions begin now. You begin to respect that, and you begin to formulate that. And here's something you got to be very, 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 very careful. Careful of. We all say this, but it's really one of the dumbest things we could say, okay? You ready? Have I set that up well? Well, this is how I was raised. Well, it worked for me. No. No. Every child is different. Maybe you got a spanking every day because that's what your parents knew you needed. Maybe they don't. It wasn't me. What are you talking about? You understand each and every child needs to be treated individually. And understand their limits. Understand their challenges. Understand their needs. Work around their needs as you continue to nurture them. And then here's where it really gets important. Remember, parenting is training. You are in the training business. And so here's what your life is about, discipline. And here's the very first thing that everybody needs to have on your list, all right? Here's the very first thing, especially in these first 6 years. You got to win the attitude battle now. This is where you win the attitude battle. Because even at a young age, children are going to show you their hints of rebellion. They're going to show you their selfishness. They're going to show you the willful disobedience. Now notice, we need to bear in mind kids spill things. Kids are easily enticed. Kids can easily get distracted. Kids can sometimes kind of lose their mind. But when it comes to the willfulness, you nip it now. If you don't nip it now, your teenage years are going to be horrible. And so you even recognize, even in the infant stage, when the attitude is showing itself. you also recognize in the early years their negative personality traits. Maybe they're always wanting to be isolated. Maybe they got nerves. Maybe they're a little prone to selfishness. Maybe they get angry, agitated easy. Remember, these are the years that they're establishing their emotional controls. It's time to teach control. The series, Growing Kids God's Way, is a great way of learning that. One of the tricks that we got from that series, this was so neat, is anybody here have a child that likes to interrupt you when you're talking to others? That's a no-no. Never. And if you're cursed with parents who are the last ones to leave the church building, God bless you. Here's what we learned in the series. If you need our attention, that's fine. But you cannot interrupt. You just come put your hand on us and stand there. And when we get a moment, we'll address you. That's all you got to do is stand there, put a hand on us, and we'll address you. And it works. I don't know how many times we sat there, you sat both on each side. Yes. Yeah. I'll get to you. I haven't forgotten you. You're important. Respect. Then I'll address. Never make promises of punishment that you don't plan to keep. If we go out of an assembly, it's not going to be pleasant. But also understand discipline, especially in the early years, is still training. There should never, ever, 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 ever be physical in any kind of discipline given in that kind of corporal way that there isn't clear understanding and teaching before and afterwards. And I would advise you to never, ever yell at your kids. Unless it's a life-threatening situation, you can yell all you want. But you're the parent, be in control. And one of the best things that you can do for your child is to never, ever rebuke them publicly. You praise publicly, you rebuke privately. So if you have to do something and you're in a public setting, a whisper in the ear is more than sufficient. Come here. If you do that one more time, we're going out. Is that what you want? Okay. I'll be with you in a moment. I had to be careful of doing that all the times with my kids because it seemed like every time I'd whisper and when I'd even want to tell them something nice, they would always go. So I had to start throwing in some good things. Especially when I was at Walmart with Jill once. She was about 3 years old. And I went, come here. And she went, ah. Oh, not the checkout line in front of everybody watching. Everybody thinks I'm beating my child. Oh, hey. Well, this happens all the time. Oh, what's wrong with your child? Hey. So, oh, brother, I've got to mix this up. But be creative. Leviticus 19:3. Let every one of you revere his mother and his father and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. You know, one of the best ways that you can discipline your children in the Lord is to make worship assemblies, no matter when they are, no matter how often they are, the priority of your life. You plan for them. You don't miss them. You are a part of them and you deal with them. Somebody says, well, my children can't sit that long. Yes, they can. Sometimes it requires training. Another tool that we learned, Cheryl would have church practice at the house. She would set a timer. Y'all remember those old white timers? Ding, 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 ding. You turn the timer. For 30 minutes, you have to sit here on the couch with your church book. You cannot move. You cannot say anything. If you get up, you're going to get in trouble. And they would have to sit there. And if Dad walked in the room and was a distraction, Dad got in trouble. I can't tell you how that happened, but it happened. You are not allowed to play with each other now. It's training time. And you went to 35 minutes, to 40 minutes, to an hour. And then it would ding. They knew they were done. It was like Pavlov's dogs. Yeah. But here's the point. And here's what God is telling us. It's repetition. 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 Isn't it amazing in the wonder that God can create in life? It's also amazing how life and hearts can be molded. And what God reminds all of us, and this is so important, that all of us are children. And parents who are moldable will generally have children who are moldable. These are hard years, but they are wonderful years. Make the most of the wonder. Let's close this out with an invitation. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul. If that's something that you would like to make public this morning, you would like to come before this audience and proclaim your love for the Lord, now's the time to do it. To have a life for Him because of the salvation that was provided by Him. That salvation that we need to be reminded of constantly. That salvation in Jesus Christ. So if you need to put Him on in baptism this morning, won't you come while we stand and sing?